Vermont Viewpoint is a public affairs program produced and funded by WDEV and the Radio Vermont Group. We welcome listener feedback. Email your comments to vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com.
Good morning. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. I'm Rick Singeri. All right, let's make this Fun Day Monday. We've got cats, cartoons, and kegs. Come on, this has got to be one good day today. We're going to start with the kitties. Now, sometimes you don't know what's missing in this world until somebody comes up with the idea for something that we probably should have had all along, like a vintage shop dedicated to cats. Oh, yeah. I'm just glad this stroke of genius struck right here in Vermont, in Winooski. And now to meet the two people who created Catland Vintage. First of all, Jay McCaskill. Jay, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Hi there. Thank you.
You're welcome. And her husband and co-owner, Joe McCaskill. Joe, great to have you here as well.
Hey, nice to be here. Thanks.
You're welcome. Listeners, to ask our guests about Catland Vintage, or if you've been, let us know. We'd love to hear what you thought. 244-1777, 877-291-8255. The email address, vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Jay, what exactly is Catland Vintage?
Well, Catland Vintage is an eclectic vintage store with a very strong cat theme. We have antique vintage items up to about 1970s. Sometimes things a little more recent sneak in. And a lot of our things have cats on them. We have a lot of cat figurines, cat art, anything that has a cat on it that was made before 1970, we try to get it in the store.
I think eclectic is understood, Jay, but I'm glad you threw that in as the description. Joe, where did the idea come from for Catland Vintage?
Well, I'm going to have to say that was all Jay.
Mm-hmm.
when I met her, 13 or so years ago, she probably had a smallish, by her standards, collection of, ceramic cats. And, I watched it grow, as did our relationship. And then it just got to be nuts. And then we would go to estate sales, and we would walk out with boxes of stuff. And then it was, not just cat figurines, but cat art and aprons and, anything you can think of. So that's pretty much all Jay's idea.
And Joe, you kept thinking, as this collection grows, our love does grow. So let it happen. buy another box. Joe, to your knowledge, is there any other place on earth like Catland Vintage?
I don't think so. We've tried to find those places. We keep thinking that because our collection is so eclectic and it's, been hand selected and, for so long, someone's going to come in and just write a check for all of it one day and take it away. I kind of consider it kind of like the Cooperstown of, antique cats, and, obviously, vintage cats were not in my scene before I met Jay, but yeah, we certainly haven't seen. We'll run across one or two when we're in antique stores or thrift stores, but certainly nothing like this.
All right, Jay, take me through the conversation, whatever conversation the two of you had, when one of the two of you turns to the other and says, "I have a great idea. Let's open a shop with all this stuff."
Well, I think like most great ideas, it started as sort of a joke, and it just became, it went from being a joke to becoming a goal. And we were in California and knew we wouldn't be living there for the rest of our lives and trying to figure out, well, what do we do with ourselves? And we had started to amass a pretty big hoard of stuff, not just cat stuff, but just vintage items in general. We really like kitsch stuff. We're into movies, old music. And so the joke eventually evolved into an imperative. I mean, when you end up with so much stuff, you either have to open a shop or create a very bad situation for someone else to clean up when you pass on. So we decided that, you know, we can't take it with us later in our lives. So it's better to be able to send these little kitties and other cool items back into the world and get to enjoy seeing these items have a new life.
Mm, that's beautiful. Joe, give us a little give us a little tour around Catland.
Okay. Well, yeah.
And you can get help.
It's on Little because it is a tiny shop.
That's right. And you can get help from Jay as you need it. But I'm putting you in charge of the tour so far.
Yeah. You know, you walk into the brightly colored yellow space on the outside. You turn to the left, and there's some cats. There's a whole bunch of ceramic cats, you know, and then a lot of real eclectic art, not all of it's cats, just a lot of stuff from the 50s and 60s, a lot of, you know, black velvet paintings we ended up with. You can't say no to those when they're $10 at an estate sale.
Right.
You know, you gotta rescue that stuff. It was like 10% dog items.
Wow. Canine ears just perked up all across the state.
It's like having, a barbecue place that has some vegetarian items.
Yep.
You know, you got to appease that small group that says, what about me?
You got it.
So if dog people come in and say, oh, what about us? We point to the 6 or 7 dog items and say, there you go. You know,
there's our dog section over there in that corner. Yeah. Back. That's it.
Right. Yeah. It's behind a curtain. So, you know,
that's right.
They can't be shamed. We don't want any fight between dog and cat people. We don't need that.
And we also have records, used records and vintage cookbooks. And we're trying to really focus on Vermont vintage cookbooks. So we really appreciate the regional history. Anything old Vermont as well, we definitely hope that we can increase the volume of that stuff.
Well, that's fantastic. I know there's a big, beautiful tiger velvet painting there at the store. I think there's panthers. So it's not just kitty cats. It's a lot of feline stuff. And Jay, the non-cat stuff, non-dog stuff, is there stuff that's just neither fish nor fowl, neither cat nor dog?
Absolutely. We have a small section of vintage clothes. We have sheet music, antique sheet music, which I love just because of the cover art. And a lot of those pieces go back to the early 1900s. We have a lot of homewares, dishes, plant pots, all the things that I love to collect. And I know that other people love too. We've got it. So definitely you can take your non-animal loving friends to the store and they will find something that suits their taste as well.
All right. So if they start to kick up a little fuss and say, I don't want to go to a cat store, you'll find something here. All right.
And to be honest, our cat stuff is it's hard to replace. So we're a little protective of it. We're obviously selling a lot of cat stuff, but being that's our theme, it's kind of a relief when people buy other stuff so that we don't have to start going out and scouring the world for new vintage cat stuff to replace the old cat stuff.
Do you have a daily limit? Like if you sell 5 cat things, do you cut people off? Sorry, folks.
We are afraid that, you know, someday someone like me is going to walk in the store and, as Joe said, just buy everything. Although that might be an easy out for us, so I guess that wouldn't be the worst thing that happens.
The person who walks in next says, I thought you had stuff. We just sold it all. Sorry.
It just left with
that guy. You might be able to buy a cat from him. Joe, how much love do you have for cats, Joe?
Well, not as much as Jay, but having cats of our own, I certainly have grown to appreciate them. I think maybe I had one cat, you know, before I met Jay. I mean, I was, you know, not at that time. No, it's, you know, the thing about it for me is that it really is fantastic, you know, art and a great representative of, you know, mid-century modern stuff. So, I mean, they're really all beautiful. So that aspect for me is, you know, fun to collect. You know, it's Jay's the one who's, you know, getting them from the store. You know, I see Chuff and say, okay, this is something she would like, or this fits. Cause, you know, it's kind of a narrow spectrum of what would fit in our store. I mean, we certainly don't just grab any ceramic cat and say, okay, you're with the rest of the cat family here. I mean, it's got to have a specific look and date and things like that.
So curating.
Yeah, thank you. I guess I could have just curated and summed that up instead of babbling my way through that. But
you have to make sure they have all their shots and all that kind of stuff, too. So, all right. Jay, is there a favorite cat that you have had or that really stands out for you that maybe even inspired all this cat vintage love?
Well, I've had cats my whole life. My parents were big cat people, and so I just have grown up with cats. So in my sort of mentally aware lifetime, I had a couple cats named Summer and Bunter when I was 4 or 5, I think, and they were with me into my teenage years, so they were my formative cats. And fortunately, I've only had a few since then, because if you are a successful cat owner or steward or whatever you want to call if you're a successful cat mom, you don't end up having too many cats in your lifetime. They stick around.
Yep. That's a good point. Joe, this is a tricky question. Are cats allowed in Catland Vintage?
They absolutely are.
Aww.
But all we've had is dogs.
Really?
People brought their dogs. Yeah, cats are totally welcome. You know, it's funny. You don't really know what to expect when you open up a Catland type place. But, yeah, people are always, they might not bring in their cats, but, you know, tons of people have said, oh, here's a photo of my cat, and this and that. We get cat stories, you know, people, you know, pictures of their cats. It's actually really funny, and it's certainly a great way to meet people.
Joe, I love that you just described. Oops, sorry, go ahead.
I was saying, but nobody's brought in their cat, but absolutely, that would be nice.
Bring it on.
I love that Joe described Catland Vintage as a Catland type place.
it's like Dolly World, but with cats.
That's right. All right. So, Jay, how did you pick Winooski, Vermont for the Catland Vintage World Headquarters?
Well, we were lucky. It sort of picked us. We were planning to open the store at some point, but we arrived during COVID, and so the plans were kind of on hold. And one day we just realized that this great space in Winooski was available, the old Onion River Cobbler place on West Canal Street. And I love historic buildings, and this storefront is just so authentically early 1900s. And the interior also has most of its original features. It's really like walking back in time. We had to help make some of that happen by peeling off layers of wood paneling that had been put on in a later era. But, I mean, what better place for an antique vintage store than a historic building?
Yeah, so absolutely.
We just jumped at that opportunity. And Winooski is such a vibrant and interesting place. And it was just a window of opportunity that we might not have had otherwise if the world hadn't been on pause last fall.
And it is just off the traffic circle or the Winooski Speedway down West Canal.
We're just learning how people feel about that.
That's right. It is a beautiful old building. Joe, what has been the reaction of people who have visited Catland Vintage so far?
I think they're pretty blown away. Well, I mean, there's two different reactions. One, people really appreciate that something like this exists. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you see people with a lot of self-control and, you know, maybe they'll buy one or two items, but, you know, they could walk out with 20. So I think people really appreciate just the fact that a store like that exists. And then secondly, for the non-cat people, we have enough, you know, musical instruments and art and other stuff that, you know, I think they appreciate that as well. You know, there's not another antique store around there. So the reaction has been great. And it's funny, you know, we're from San Diego, so we got here a year ago. And you really don't realize how nice mm-hmm. Vermonters are until you have a store and see people all day.
Yep.
And every single person, you know, we're having these long conversations with people we would never meet, but they're just happy a space like that exists. And we're happy that people like that are coming in.
Oh, I love it.
You know, it's been a real bonus for the whole, you know, the whole thing.
Well, Jay, Joe mentioned musical instruments, so I have to ask, what is Pony Death Ride?
Well, Pony Death Ride is our not-so-secret musical comedy alter ego. Joe and I are longtime rock musicians, and when we met, as Joe said, about 13 years ago, we were getting a little bit tired of the rock and roll music grind. We were both in different bands, and that's how we came to meet. And we just realized that a lot of the instruments were very heavy, the equipment, it was a bit of a pain to schlep all that stuff around. So we said, hey, why don't we just strip it all down to a ukulele and a tambourine, maybe the occasional kazoo, and play some music and have a good time. And so we are a little blue, not too bad, but we're definitely parental guidance recommended.
Gotcha.
And we've sort of forgotten how to play our songs over the past year, but we're hoping that now that we've got the store finished, that we can gradually get back into playing music again.
All right. You have to let us know when that's happening. Joe, we talked about the building, how beautiful it is, and the work that needed to be done to it. The exterior of the building is painted canary yellow. The interior walls are robin's egg blue. Is this a nod to cats?
Well, no. But because it sounds so good, I'm going to say, yeah.
That's there you go.
What we had in mind. You know, being tucked in the corner right there next to Rosie's Confections, you know, we were, because we're on the end of the circle there, you know, Jay's brilliant idea was, well, how can we, you know, attract people down here? And so yellow was the answer. And even the building owner was like, what are you talking, a yellow building? and we've had so many people come in and say, wow, that's what a good idea. Mm-hmm. You know, and Jay reminds me every time that was her idea. but the blue inside was actually a color we found as we were stripping down just all that excess wood that was in there. And, you know, we have photos on our website of this project and how much wood there was, and it was just nuts. But when we finally got down underneath everything, we found that color in some spots, and so we matched that. It just so happened it looks really good in there. That's a great color, but it was probably from the 50s or so.
Yeah. 40s, 50s.
So we wanted to kind of honor the legacy of that space.
The Star Bakery era.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Hey, Jay, where can I get some wearable cat heads?
Well, we do have a few that are potentially for sale in the store. They make great decor, but if someone wants to buy a big plush cat head, we can probably accommodate them. The cat heads that we had were purchased for a music video that we made probably 10 years ago, and of the dozen or so costumes that we had to buy for this big video project, we managed to get rid of everything but the cat head. we figured they'd come in handy one day.
So this is kind of like a vintage store slash museum, isn't it, over there at Catland?
A little bit. I actually have an educational and professional background in museums, truth be told.
There we go. Joe, if you weren't running such a brilliant little shop, what would you be doing?
Probably running a dog-themed vintage store. You know, the answer is, who knows? Nothing. I mean, I really have no talent. I mean, I was a teacher for a while. I was a terrible real estate agent in California for a couple of years. I mean, this is like, I needed this store. You know, I needed to say, yeah, oh, this is what I do. I'm a business owner. Truth is, making pizzas or I don't know, I'm just happy to be in Vermont, really. I'd do anything.
Catland Vintage in Winooski. It keeps Joe McCaskill off the streets. There we go.
That's pretty much it.
Oh, my. Jay and Joe McCaskill are stirring it up in the news. Their shop is called Catland Vintage. You can learn more at the website, catlandvintage.com. Jay and Joe, this has been like a catnip treat. Thank you so much for being on the show this morning.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take care. Wonderful to have them. All right. We're going to take a break for CBS News. Then we're going to come back to hear from you folks with the half hour of open phones. And a reminder that today at 1, it's Travels with Charlie and then 2 hours of The Getaway with the godfather of folk, Mr. Greg Hooker. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Let our staff at the Warren Store ease you back into a pre-pandemic lifestyle. We can cater your postponed events and even bake you a custom cake. We can dress you in comfortable casual clothing. Make it a day trip for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. Have lunch on our deck, head upstairs for some much-needed retail therapy, then treat yourself to a specialty coffee from our new espresso machine. You can pick up a colorful Warren Store beach towel for a dip in the river, and how about a delicious house-made ice cream sandwich? Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village, and warrenstore.com.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Sengary, and the phones are open for the next half hour. We're at 244-1777, 877-291-8255. You can also email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. I guess that makes us not only the open phones, but open internet for the next half hour, as if we could ever close that down. It's funny. I just want to, before I get into what I was going to talk about, you just heard that podcast commercial, and there's a quote from Lee Cattell. It says that this show is what we cover, what makes Vermont so unique and special. And man, today is that day. It's like I programmed today to be to kind of follow that that theme. We just had Catland Vintage in Winooski, a little store that has cat items, vintage cat items for sale. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we're going to hear from the Center for Cartoon Studies. Imagine that. 17 years now, a school to teach you how to cartoon in White River Junction. And then at 10:30, we'll talk to one of the owners of Brocklebank Craft Brewing and the Vermont Nano Fest, which is coming up this Saturday, and the beer culture that is so prevalent, so wonderful, and the little nano breweries that someday grow up into microbreweries here in Vermont, but they are really creating some special things here in Vermont. Just three subjects that are what make Vermont so unique and special. Just thought I'd mention that little aside because I heard that podcast commercial. All right. It was one of those perfect Vermont weekends, so I'd love to know how you took advantage of it. Did you get out and hike or bike or kayak or paddleboard, something wonderful? Let us know, 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-TALK. That's 877-291-8255. Did you visit some amazing place or event, get out to a concert and want to tell us about it? I packed a lot in a few days this weekend, but again, I'd rather you take advantage of the open phones And, of course, as usual, time for you to talk about whatever you'd like. I just throw out some subjects. You can jump on those or you can create your own. 244-1777-877-291-8255. You can email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. This weekend, the final Travis Roy Foundation wiffle ball tournament in Jericho. Anybody get out there and play or watch? Incredible stuff. They raised this time over $1 million. They set an incredible goal to raise $1 million this weekend for the Travis Roy Foundation and went that far. Can you believe it that that would happen? Of course it would happen here in Vermont, but I guess that's the final one. So, and that's too bad, but I've taken part in it 1 year and it was a lot of fun. All right, we have Kaya in here.
I'll get you started.
Yeah, please.
On where to go. So my new thing is now, because I ride motorcycle.
Yeah.
My new thing is.
What do you ride?
I ride a Harley Davidson 883 Extra Low.
No kidding.
My thing now is.
I'm more impressed every day.
Oh, thank you. My thing is that I'm going to try to find little weird places on the map.
Yeah.
Rhode Island Corners.
Oh, yeah, Rhode Island Corners.
Oh, of course you know where it is.
Yeah, but no, I know, let's see, I think it's up towards the lake. I can't remember now. Go ahead.
Hinesburg, Huntington,
oh,
Mechanicsville
yeah.
area.
Wrong.
I lost my map because I go by the Rand McNally map. I do not map. I do not use my GPS.
Nor I.
So I'm on Route 116.
It's a better way to get lost.
There you go.
Right.
Apparently, I left my little bag open and I lost the map. That was great. So then I did get the GPS out. I got so fouled up using my GPS. Yes. Never again.
Well,
I will use my map.
What do we know about Rhode Island Corners now?
Never found it. Because I couldn't figure out using the GPS on my bike.
Did you find anything?
No, I did find the back road from Mechanicsville to Williston.
All right.
Yeah.
Well,
that's the thing.
It's kind of neat to find those back roads, right?
It was. So yeah. that I thought I would get you started off. That's what I did this weekend.
I got lost up in East Hardwick and drove around, and I've got some places I stopped at. That I was really headed to, like Judavine Falls.
Oh, okay.
Have you ever been?
No, I haven't.
Oh, man.
Okay.
We're going to talk about
See
that.
See that one? I'll throw the dart on the map and look for that next
yeah.
time.
Yeah, all right.
But so I'm taking Wednesday off, so I think Wednesday I'm going to go back and try to find Rhode Island Corner. I'll
all
let
right.
you know how it goes.
Yeah, you still got St. Rocks and Central Park. And
oh, there's a Central Park, Vermont?
Yeah, there is.
Okay, it's
and
on my
you've
map.
You've been to Goose Green.
Again, Goose Green couldn't find it,
oh.
but I was very close.
And there's a Green Bay as well.
Oh, good grief. Indeed. I'm out of here. I'll give time for somebody else.
All right. Thank you, Kaya. Always great to hear from her on her Harley. Wow, an 880. That's a big machine. That's great to hear. All right. 224-1777, 877-291-8255. Those are the numbers for you to call in. All right. I'll tell you where I started this weekend. Friday, I got out of here, and I went right down the street to Farr's Field to the Vermont Antique and Classic Car Meet. And what a treat that is. You know, it's been years since I've been, so it was great to get back there. And, oh, man, you know, I've got wonderful pictures of beautiful cars that have been restored, amazing hood ornaments. You could just spend the day, you know, taking pictures of the incredible hood ornaments from these vintage automobiles. It's just lovely as can be. Of course, I found a Packard, which I love, and that was neat. Oh, so many wonderful cars. So congratulations for a great event to the automobile enthusiasts, Vermont automobile enthusiasts, who did some wonderful stuff this weekend, putting on a great show. All right, off we go to Williston, and we're going to talk to Leon. Hey, Leon, what's going on?
Well, good morning. I'm just sitting here kind of laughing to myself about Rhode Island Four Corners.
What would we find there? If we found it, Leon, what would we find at Rhode Island Four Corners?
Well, you would find a four-corner intersection with two dirt roads and a blacktop road and a Vermont Electric Co-op substation on the northwest side of the corner.
Sounds like a place for a lot of fun, a lot of sightseeing. And I... Anything that you could possibly do in Rhode Island Four Corners, if you were able to find it?
Probably look at the scenery and admire the open space that still hasn't been filled up with houses.
Oh, touche. Now, Leon, our Kaya went from Mechanicsville up to Williston. Did she go by your place at all?
Well, I lived about 3 miles from there, but when she went to Williston, she went straight at the Four Corners above the high school, and she should have taken a right on the Richmond Road. And if she went on the Richmond Road, she would have eventually went through the Rhode Island Four Corners.
Oh, you know, I took that the other day on Thursday, heading into Hinesburg, so I should have known this. I went through Rhode Island Four Corners the other day. So how about that? I found it, and Arkaya, who was looking for it, did not. The cruel irony.
I saw Richmond Road, too, and I wondered about it.
You just made somebody very unhappy, Leon, but not me. I'm so glad you called. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. You have a good day.
You too. All right. Oh, that's choice. I did. I was driving back home, stopped off to see a friend in Hinesburg, and decided to get off at the Richmond exit, and took Richmond Road, Hinesburg Road, I was right there. That's why I know it. I was there on Thursday. Oh, brilliant. Yeah, we were at the Classic Car Show, and we've been talking about Rhode Island Four Corners. Here's some other places I went. I'd love to hear how you got out and enjoyed this absolutely stunning Vermont summer weekend. But I left the car show, and I beat it up to East Hardwick for a couple stops. I went to Judevine Falls, and on Wednesday we're going to talk to the owner, Bob Edibles, about Judevine Falls. But if you've ever driven, I think it's is it Route 14 by Judevine Falls, you've seen the sign. Oh, my gosh, pull in. I think it's like a suggested donation of $5. Throw it in there. Throw cash at it. Go see Judevine Falls. There's the beautiful lower falls, and then this path has been built up to the upper falls, and then there's even some small falls above that, and it is one of those beauty spots of Vermont. It is absolutely stunning. And if you've driven by and said, I wonder what that is, yeah, just pull in and see it. It's Vermont. You should pull in and see. Anytime there's a sign that says applesauce sold here or, you know, whatever, garlic or Judevine Falls, you know, wonder of Vermont, pull in, see it. This is why we live here, folks. I then went over to meet up with Kevin. I had him on a few weeks ago. He and his wife own Whitefield Hop Yard in East Hardwick. If you're drinking some wonderful IPAs that use Vermont hops, you can thank Kevin and his wife, Karen, because they're growing some great hops. But to walk in a hop yard, these things are a vine, so they have to put strings up, and they grow to a height of 16 feet, and some of them are right now reaching that, and got to see the walk through a hop yard, which is kind of nice, but also see how they're processed, and that was pretty wonderful. And then, of course, stopped off at our friends there at the Willie store in Greensboro. Had to pick up some Hill Farmstead, but a Friday afternoon at the Willie store is fabulous. I mean, our friends at the Willie store are doing some great business. It was wonderful to see. People are, you know, getting seafood and beer and doing full-on grocery runs, and it was a lot of fun to be in the Willie store again. All right, off we go to Middlesex now, and let's talk to Ray. How you doing, Ray?
Oh, not too bad.
What's
beautiful
going on?
Day.
A beautiful day, yeah.
The question I have for you is, any way that you can find this out? I was told by someone that this is to do with electric cars and batteries and stuff, that it takes so many thousand gallons of fuel to produce the material that they use to make the electric batteries, and the amount of fuel that they end up using will only produce enough batteries to support 250,000 cars. But these electric batteries are only good for 10 years.
Right.
And once they're done, you have to replace them. You can't recycle these batteries.
Mm-hmm.
They end up going into a landfill, from what I was told.
Yeah.
And they don't decompose or anything like that.
Yeah, and so Ray, I've heard other people spend... I've heard other people bring that up about recycling the batteries, and I've brought it up, and I'll bring it up tomorrow. I'm glad this is perfect timing. We're going to have the folks from Waterbury Leap on tomorrow, and this is a great subject to ask them about. What you're bringing up, I've heard before, and I don't know if it's fact or fiction. You know, sometimes people are naysayers of something and might bring it up and say, well, it's this, and it might not be fact. I have asked about the recycling part before, and, you know, they've talked about reuse. And so we'll see. This is a perfect question. I do not know the answers,
yeah.
But Ray, tomorrow we have people on, who should at least know, how to get that answer. All right. I love it.
Okay,
anything more? Go ahead.
Put in the landfill.
I know.
Once they're put into the landfill, they don't decompose.
It's so not what we want.
For life in the landfill.
And we've got one landfill left in this state, and you know, we don't know what else to do. It's right near
and
a lake.
Also,
it's not good. Ray.
Also, when they're
go ahead.
Yes.
Keep going.
Also, when they're making these electric cars, that's good on certain things, but. How do they get their electricity? They get it from Green Mountain. I'm just saying Green Mountain Power, but it could be any power company.
Right.
How does that power company generate their power? They're using diesel fuel and stuff to generate their plants.
Well, they're more and more.
What's wrong with the?
Again, we'll
what's
ask
wrong
this
with
question
going with
tomorrow.
These rivers and having their generators produce some power off these rivers or solar.
Well, yeah. So a lot of the GMP has been renewable. If you count things like hydro up in Quebec, we get a lot from there. But again, this is a great question. That electric has to come from somewhere, has to be generated. Now, is it being generated cleanly? And thus, you know, that would, take away the use of, gasoline, which definitely is, you know, creating, fumes and smog, that destroys, you know, our air. But, you know, are we using the same thing to create the electric to get us moving? That would be, you know, no positive at all. So,
right.
Yep.
Because you got rivers that flow, water flows. Why don't they have these dams, put these dams back in this effect so that the water will generate electricity for us?
Now, GMP, Kristen Carlson was on Friday, on, Common Sense Radio, and they do have, the dams, I think, on the Connecticut. She mentioned a number of dams that they do have, but again, like I mentioned, they also get a lot of their power from, Hydro-Quebec, and the dams up in, northern Quebec. But these are great questions. Where does that original power come from to create that electricity?
And also, when you have these dams that are on these rivers that a couple of them have been taken out that were on the Winooski, the reason why they took them out because they wanted to go with fossil fuels because it was cheaper, and they had less personnel that they had to hire to maintain them.
Yep.
Well, but the dams back in go, I think it's called hydro. I'm not sure.
It is. It's called
but it
hydro.
Gives, but then you got more people that you can employ. So it gives more people jobs.
Yep. These are all good points, Ray. I've got a skedaddle. I absolutely appreciate those questions, and your timing couldn't be more perfect. Tomorrow morning, I don't know exactly what time, but we will have a couple people from Leap on. So be listening tomorrow morning, and I'll try to get those questions answered. Waterbury Leap is putting on an event about electric cars on Wednesday, and so we'll get to ask them about this, Ray, tomorrow. So brilliant questions. These are concerns. Power comes from somewhere, and if we want to drive around, and unfortunately, we need transportation to get around this state. Excuse me. Where's that going to come from, ultimately? And, Ray, you ask great questions. So I'll try to get you answers for those tomorrow. All right. Let's close the spigot, Danny. And, we're going to take a break for CBS News. Then we'll be back to visit the folks at the Center for Cartoon Studies in White River Junction. Sox off tonight as they head to Yankee Stadium to open a series tomorrow. So we'll have the full Brady Farkas show tonight, 5:30 to 7 o'clock. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Let our staff at the Warren Store ease you back into a pre-pandemic lifestyle. We can cater your postponed events and even bake you a custom cake. We can dress you in comfortable casual clothing. Make it a day trip for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. Have lunch on our deck, head upstairs for some much-needed retail therapy, then treat yourself to a specialty coffee from our new espresso machine. You can pick up a colorful Warren Store beach towel for a dip in the river, and how about a delicious house-made ice cream sandwich? Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village, and warrenstore.com.
This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. I've got to admit, several years ago, when I heard someone was opening a Center for Cartoon Studies in White River Junction, I thought, cool, but how in the world is that a thing and that will work? Well, it's been around now for 17 years. So it's a thing, man, and it's time to update us on CCS and some of the great stuff they're doing there, and that's going to be done by co-founder James Stern. James, it is great to have you on the show today.
Thanks for inviting me on. Good to talk to you.
Listeners, to ask James about the Center for Cartoon Studies or to let us know if you've taken classes there, you can give us a call, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. You can email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. James, earlier this morning, I had a couple people who have opened a shop selling vintage cat figurines, and I wondered why they would do so. Back in the early 2000s, I wondered, and I'm sure other people wondered, the same about what you were doing, opening a school for cartoon studies. So why did you do that?
Well, I grew up loving comics. I grew up reading Peanuts and For Better or For Worse and Blondie and everything that was in my local newspaper, and then started reading Marvel comics. And, even when I was neglecting my studies and wasn't a great student, I was really absorbed in the narratives and the images and the drawings of these comic books. And as I grew older, even though, my taste might have matured or my interests varied, I always felt like what an amazing medium to tell stories and to share information. As a practitioner, it's kind of like almost like a spiritual practice. I just love sitting in my studio working on comics. So, I think going back to the cat figurines, I mean, there's a collectible market for just about everything these days, from cereal boxes to figurines to comic books. But I think of comics as just like a real living, alive medium that people really seem to engage with.
Well, how difficult was it to convince people that this was a good idea, to start a school of cartoon studies back in the early 2000s?
It was less difficult than it would have been maybe a decade earlier. Right around 2000, there were books like Art Spiegelman's Mouse. Nobody could deny was a piece of literature and an amazing piece of art. There was a generation of young cartoonists being read by people like Chris Ware and Jeff Sacco, whose work were winning literary awards and going to museums. I taught at an art school in 1996, whatever it was. And the department, they had a sequential art department, and it was the fastest growing department at the school. Hmm. So there was definitely a need for that, and a lot of schools weren't offering it. And, you know, at the time, I had this idea to open a cartoon school, and it was kind of like the right timing with comics as a medium and its maturation, but it was also the right timing for White River Junction. White River Junction was a railroad town that, you know, for various reasons had seen better days, but had a lot of character and a lot of creativity and a lot of interesting stuff already going on and a lot of underutilized infrastructure. So we're, I was able to, with my co-founder, Michelle Lally, put together kind of a team and a board of directors that was able to get into a building and find students, and we were off and running.
Yeah, let's talk about the student side. You've created this center, and all of a sudden now you need students. So do you remember the discussions you had with potential students for that first class? And how, you know, you convinced them, okay, come on, enroll.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, like, our first class is full. It was a full 20 students.
Wow.
And, you know, we put word out on the internet. We put together some really beautiful brochures by some really amazing cartoonists. And, there was some interesting conversations. At one point, I had a student who came by, and we were literally doing the renovation in the old Kawadi downtown department store, and the walls were blocked in, and he had come here from Texas with his mom, and I said, you could see the worried look on her face. And he was looking around like, oh, my gosh. And I think he had gotten a scholarship, much more prestigious university. And he wound up coming to CCS. Like, he kind of loved comics so much and saw the vision of the place, and it's funny that that student now has his own imprint at HarperCollins.
Wow!
And actually, besides making comics, he publishes them and is a mover and shaker in the publishing world.
Oh, that's so great. James, I got to tell you, one of the interns I had at a radio station in Oxford, Ohio, years later wound up going to CCS and still lives
here
in Vermont. Isn't that an incredible story?
That's amazing. I'm always amazed by, we had a bunch of artwork donated to the school a few years ago. And I was trying to get a show at the Museum of the City of New York, which is right on Central Park, Fifth Avenue. And I kind of made a cold call, basically. And, you know, usually it's like, yeah, okay, goodbye. But the person who took my message heard of the school, and their roommate, who is living in Brooklyn or Queens or wherever, was a CCS alumni, beloved CCS alumni. Hmm. And she's like, I'll make sure the right people see this. And long story short, we had this amazing exhibition there and published the coffee table book. And so our alumni are, yeah, definitely like infiltrating institutions and leaving their mark that way, and also by producing amazing work.
Yep. What kind of classes do you offer at CCS?
Well, we have a 1 and 2 year kind of immersive program. If you do the 2 year program and you have a bachelor's degree, you can get an MFA. Mm. Otherwise, you get a certificate. But it's an immersive program, and there's a history class and a production class, so you can learn InDesign and Photoshop and coloring the comics. And then there's a cartooning workshop where you learn all the intricacies of putting together a comic book. And you do a lot of panels, and you tell a lot of stories. And that's kind of a beating heart of the school. But then we have all kinds of summer classes, and we're doing a lot more stuff online, of course, which every school is doing, of course, in the last year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of opening up more avenues and allowing people who probably can pull up stakes and come to White River Junction to experience the curriculum that we offer.
How has CCS grown in these 17 years since you started?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, we definitely aren't all that much bigger. A little bit. We offer more classes and workshops. Our 1 and 2 year programs are about the same size. I think we're doing just kind of more cool stuff, right? Like we helped set up the Vermont Cartoonist Laureate position. We do a lot of publishing projects with various publishers and nonprofits and other institutions. We have a cartoonist studio prize where we award money, cash prize to people for the best webcomic and graphic novel. So all those kind of stuff. We have a Saturday morning cartoon club where we open up our doors to the community and children come from, oh boy, sometimes they drive hours away to attend.
Ugh. That sounds like heaven to me right there. A kid who
come on down.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Age, Rick. I don't know how old you are, but you're more than welcome.
Saturday morning cartoons in my neighborhood was the biggest thing in the world.
Broadcast live.
Oh, that would be great. Well, since you opened, you know, in 2004, daily papers, comic sections have shrunk. But as you mentioned, with Mouse, graphic novels have become this serious trend. So how have these two things impacted the cartoonist job market?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, you know, there's a lot, obviously, web comics and graphic novels is a thing. But I also think of cartooning as almost, if you learn cartooning, you're learning visual literacy. And, you know, when I was younger, you know, you used a typewriter, right? And today, everybody communicates with image writers. You know, you hold it in the palm of your hand, and you send emojis, and you take pictures, and you do quick little drawings. And more we're communicating with pictures, and that's how we kind of communicate, in the digital age. And I think by studying comics, you really become really adept at that. And I think that kind of skill set can translate to so many aspects. So even if, you know, you might not make a living writing a graphic novel, I think knowing how to communicate and embed narrative into a visual architecture will serve anybody really well.
James, yeah, we really can't talk about CCS without talking about the impact on the village of White River Junction that you've all had. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, White River Junction sits right on the border of New Hampshire, which, of course, doesn't have sales tax. So a lot of the stores, they struggle. And it's a train going right through the downtown as well. The interstate is a mile up the street. So a lot of people, you know, they say, I've been to White River Junction, and they just talk about the bus station and the McDonald's for 89 to 91. So when I came here, the downtown certainly looked like a Swiss cheese. But the rents were cheap, and there was a lot of creative people here. You know, Northern Stage was here, and the Main Street Museum. And you know, there was developers doing some really funky projects. So it felt it was a real comfortable fit. And, now, boy, there's just so much. There's a memory care facility. I'm looking out my studio window right now in the old Italian market, and I see a whole apartment complex coming up right now. They're tearing up the streets and putting more, new infrastructure down. So it's exciting, but, it's also, you just don't want to also see, the rents and everything get so high so that the people that moved here can't afford to
stay. Yeah, this is true. But there is an energy, a vibrancy to White River Junction that has come back, and it's great to see. One really exciting project of CCS has been a graphic guide for to the U.S. healthcare system. What is this?
Yeah, so about 4 years ago, I worked with one of our alumni, Dan Knox, to create a This Is What Democracy Looks Like, a graphic guide governance. It was right after, four years ago. Yeah, it was right after the election. And, when people like, democracy itself seemed to be in peril, and all this polls showed that most people couldn't even name three branches of government. So working with educators, we put together this this graphic guide and got it out into communities and distributed in comic shops throughout the country and in public schools throughout the Midwest and California, up and down the seaboard. And from there, we started, publishing, like I said earlier, comics is just such a great way to share information and make it interesting and engaging. So a year and a half ago, I applied for a Radcliffe Fellowship, which is this very prestigious fellowship at Harvard University, and lo and behold, I was awarded one. Mm. And I had a year basically to work on a comic about the U.S. healthcare system and how it works. So I think most people, it's hard to wrap your brains around the U.S. healthcare system.
Yes,
if you ask people that, they'll just say it's a big dumpster fire and throw up their hands. But it affects almost everybody. And, the idea for this comic is to give everybody a little, literacy in the subject matter so they can better advocate for themselves and their loved ones. And, hopefully that'll lead to change. And we partner with organizations who are advocating change and work on healthcare education as well.
James, I also love the one-week cartooning workout. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I put that together with one of my CCS colleagues, Alec Longstreth, and it's a way that anybody can experience the CCS curriculum. And if you've never done comics or you want to kind of build your cartooning muscles, once a week for a week, you'll get an email and sign up for it for free at the CCS website. And you get a little lesson every week, and it asks you to do something, and it gives you some resources to help you do that thing. And it just introduces you to the mechanics of cartooning. And even though it's a week, you can, you don't have to do them every day. You can space it out over a month. I've talked to so many people that just, it's helped kind of inspire them and kind of get their cartooning engine revving again.
What other types of workshops do you hold there?
Oh, boy. Oh, we have everything from, some basic animation workshops, memoir workshops, to a queer comics workshop. We have stuff for kids. All different kinds of focus there. Every year we throw some new stuff out there just to see if it'll stick, if there's an interest in it as well.
What's the Cartoonist Veterans Project you've got going?
Well, a few years ago, we started working with the VA. The VA is like a mile up the street here.
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt like another universe, this gated facility. And the cartoon students and the veterans, there wasn't a lot of overlap. And we decided to kind of bring some cartoonists up there and listen to veterans tell their stories. And we started making comics about it. And we created two of them. I think they're also available on our website. People can download them for free. I should also add that all the comics that we make, all these graphic guides, are available on our website, and people can download them for free.
And that's cartoonstudies.org. I'll mention that, cartoonstudies.org.
That's right. Thank you. And it was just been a remarkable project. I think the veterans really appreciated people listening and hearing their stories and working. It was more... it was very collaborative, it was a very moving experience for me, hearing these stories and seeing how moved the students were and how much the veterans appreciated the engagement.
Yeah, that's absolutely brilliant. I know you've had many, but who are some of your noteworthy alums there from CCS?
Oh, gosh. Now you're putting me on the spot. I mean, I can name a bunch, but then I'm going to leave off so many.
I know. you're under pressure. Just give me five, and then the rest you could say didn't make it alphabetically or something.
Well, Tilly Walden jumps right to my mind. She came right out of high school to CCS and has published so many amazing graphic novels. I don't know. She's in her young to mid-20s, and now it's teaching at the school.
Brilliant.
She kind of traveled a bit around the world and came back to Vermont. So that's kind of amazing. And her work is just breathtakingly beautiful and magical. There's a guy by the name of Chuck Forsman, And he's created a few books that have become Netflix series, which is really cool.
Nice.
And he's having a really good time with it. Oh, boy, the list can go on and on.
We'll stop right there because I want to get to one more thing. Yeah,
sure.
And they're listed on the website as well, cartoonstudies.org. You can see the really wonderful alumni who have gone there. But, James, I think during the next pandemic quarantine, I'm going to lock myself with cases of Amish-style pretzels and Vermont IPAs in the Schultz Library because I'll never get bored. What will I have to read in there?
Oh, my gosh. You're going to have so much to read. We have a zine library, a collection of, like, zines from creators from all over the world. We have collections of comic strips and comic books and manga. We have shelves of our alumni work and faculty work. We have superhero comics and kids comics and YA comics. And, of course, it's the Schultz Library. So we have an incredible collection of Charles Schultz's work, including those old Peanuts faucet paperback covers. And my friend Steph, a cartoonist, even donated a little piano that Beethoven plays on.
Schroeder. Oh, that's so great. Now, let's talk. We got about a minute and a half here. When do semesters begin at CCS?
Yeah, we'll be welcoming a new class in the first week in September. So we're really looking forward to that. And we'll have classes in real life, you know, and people can come together, you know, let's knock on wood, right?
Mm-hmm.
That things stay the same here in Vermont. I think a lot of people really appreciated going to school in Vermont this last year. And it was amazing how resilient and creative our students were throughout this whole year, the last year and a half. Very, very inspiring.
And, James, if someone applied now, how soon could they begin matriculating there at the Center for Cartoon Studies?
Well, for the most part, this fall might be too late.
Mm-hmm.
But I say that, but we have had students join our class, like, you know, the day before we were about to start. So there's always a chance you can slip in. But for the 1 and 2 year programs, that usually starts in September. So people could apply now for next year, or who knows, maybe they could slip into the fall as well.
All right. James Sturm is co-founder of the Center for Cartoon Studies in White River Junction. And again, you can learn more and download some of those wonderful comics at cartoonstudies.org. James, thanks so much for being on the show this morning.
It was my pleasure.
All right. Great to have you. News is next, and then we're going to be back to learn about NanoFest and Brocklebank Craft Brewing. And coming up today at 11, we've got Common Sense Radio with Bill Sayre. Tonight at 7, Jazzy John Wilson with Dinner Jazz at 7 o'clock here on WDEV.
Let our staff at the Warren Store ease you back into a pre-pandemic lifestyle. We can cater your postponed events and even bake you a custom cake. We can dress you in comfortable casual clothing. Make it a day trip for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. Have lunch on our deck, head upstairs for some much-needed retail therapy, then treat yourself to a specialty coffee from our new espresso machine. You can pick up a colorful Warren Store beach towel for a dip in the river, and how about a delicious house-made ice cream sandwich? Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village, and warrenstore.com.
This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. Now let's drink. Well, at least let's talk about some of the delicious brewing fare created by some of the state's weeest brewers, the little ones. They're getting together this weekend for what's called Vermont Nano Fest. It's sponsored by Brocklebank Craft Brewing in Tunbridge, and we're going to hear about the Nano Fest and the Nano Brewery this half hour. Joining me to fill us in on these topics is Ann Linehan. She's co-owner of Brocklebank and organizer of Vermont Nano Fest. Ann, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Thanks, Rick.
And listeners, if you've got a question for Ann or if you've attended NanoFest in the past, you can give us a call, 244-1777, 877-291-8255, or you can email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. And what is Brocklebank Craft Brewing?
Well, Brocklebank is a nano brewery. We opened 6 years ago on a back road in Tunbridge. Just very small. We brew all different kinds of beers. We have 9 different beers on tap at any one time for people who visit the tasting room. And we like to be welcome to everybody. All kinds of different people come into the brewery.
Why did you decide to start Brocklebank?
Well, I got my husband a gift of a book about homebrewing and kind of created a monster. He was brewing so much beer at home that we finally decided that we needed to move it out of the basement and open it to the public.
So well done, Anne. It all started with a book. I love it. Now, how big or small is Brocklebank?
Well, we are one of the smallest in Vermont. A lot of people consider the size of breweries based on either how many barrels they produce in a year or how many gallons they can brew at one time. So a barrel, if people aren't familiar with that, is about 31 gallons of beer. A half barrel, that's the size of a keg that people might remember from their college days.
Yes.
But breweries are generally considered in the number of barrels they produce. So at Brocklebank, we produce about 100 barrels of beer every year. And I did a little research on some of the numbers. And in the whole state of Vermont, about 300,000 barrels of beer are produced every year, which sounds like a lot. But Anheuser-Busch produces about 125 million barrels. So when you think of us as just a lowly 100 barrels, we're pretty tiny.
So don't worry, Budweiser drinkers. Brocklebank is not going to bring back down the monolith that is, what is it now, InBev or whatever.
Maybe InBev.
Yeah. Now, Anne, I found something called Brocklebank and Richard Limited, which is a long-gone British car maker. I found Brocklebank Demolition, which has been in business since 1948 in South Yorkshire, England. What's Brocklebank?
Brocklebank Hill is the highest point in Tunbridge where we live and where the brewery is. So that's why we named our brewery Brocklebank. We figured there wasn't likely to be a lot of competition for that name.
I just gave you the two.
you maybe missed Brocklebank Craft Plumbing, which is my husband's business here in Central Vermont.
I did indeed. How about that? All right. So there's only a few Brocklebanks in the world, and you're one of them. Two of them.
Yes. So,
I love that. How has the brewery grown from when it launched? 6-7 years ago?
Well, we've actually kept the brewery really small. It's a side gig for us. Both of us have day jobs, and so we're only open on Fridays and Saturdays. And we aren't really looking to grow. We just almost all of the beer that we make is sold out of the tasting room. So we're not doing a whole lot of canning, and we don't send beer out very often to stores or, obviously in the last year or so, we've hardly sent any beer out to bars. So we really haven't grown a whole lot, and that's by choice that we want to stay small.
But you can go to the tasting room to try some of the beer. You can get growler fills, and you do have cans as well there at Brocklebank. Now, what is distinctive about the beers that you brew at Brocklebank?
I think one thing that's distinctive is that we do a lot of different kinds. So quite a few of the breweries in Vermont really focus on IPAs, mm-hmm. India Pale Ales, which are a hugely popular style. And we do a couple of those as well, but we really like to have sort of something for everyone. So we always have a dark beer on the menu. We pretty much always have some kind of fruity beer. One thing you won't find at our brewery is sours, but we have, lots of other styles, so we try to have a big variety all the time.
And describe the tasting room up there on Brocklebank Hill.
Well, it is in a building that used to be the organic cow creamery many years ago. So we converted it into the brewery. We have, I guess we have about 8 bar stools. It's a small spot, and people can come and sit at the bar and do little tastes of all the different kinds of beer, and then choose their growlers or cans to take home.
What a neat historical building to have a brewery in.
Yeah.
Now, the location, it is a bit remote, and I know you have 2, like, town forests to the west of you, Randolph and Brookfield. You have 3 covered bridges just to the east of you, so it sounds like a nice, quiet place and peaceful spot. Is that what it's like up there?
It is a quiet and peaceful spot, but we actually get, you know, a fair amount of traffic coming through most weekends. The tasting room stays pretty steady throughout the day on Fridays and Saturdays.
You know, people do come from away looking for all our great, wonderful Vermont beers. So do you get people from out of state coming there to find, you know, this nano brewery up on Brocklebank Hill?
We do. The Vermont Brewers Association has a brewery passport program. You can use it as an app, or there's an old-fashioned little paper passport, and people will travel around and get actual stamps on their passport. And, you know, when you get all your stamps, you can mail it in and get T-shirts and hats and fun things like that. So we get quite a few people who are traveling around filling out their passports and visiting, you know, as many different breweries as they can.
I love that so much. All right. And it's time to pour me one of your favorites and tell me about it. What am I going to drink here?
Oh, boy. So hard to choose. I think right now the one that I'm enjoying the most, just while we've been having this hot weather, is a beer called Current Affair. It's a really light pilsner, and it's made with black currants and raspberries, and the currants are artisanally hand-harvested right down the road from our brewery.
Ooh, that sounds fresh and nice, and I can't wait to try that one. Another one that I'm interested in is Jim Dandy, which uses dandelion blossoms. Now, that sounds interesting. What's that like?
That's probably the lightest thing on our menu right now. It's really pale, and it's brewed with dandelions. It's not a lot of hops in that one at all, so it's just a mild taste. You can actually pick up a little bit of that sort of earthy dandelion flavor. It's not made with the dandelion greens, so it doesn't have that bitter taste. It's just a mild beer.
Do you ever have like a dandelion shortage?
No, if you picture the fields of Vermont in dandelion season, we have to wait until that exact moment and we go harvest as many as we can.
Oh, that's fun. All right. And I promise, just one more and I'll get back to work. Tell me about, and I hope I pronounce this right, Blackjack Shellac.
It's Blackjack Shellac.
I knew it.
That is a black pepper porter. We make it about once a year. It's a pretty smooth beer, but it's got a little bit of that ground black pepper, so it kind of gives a little heat on the finish of the beer.
That sounds so good. Really nice idea. Love that. All right. So several years ago, someone at Brocklebank, I believe, had the brilliant idea to start Vermont NanoFest. First of all, what is this?
Well, when it's a festival that celebrates the smallest breweries in Vermont, the nano breweries. And the very first year that I decided to do it, it was really small.
Of course.
Nano-sized. It was at our brewery, and we just had 2 other local breweries that joined us. So one was Bent Hill Brewing from Braintree, and the other was our fellow Tunbridge Brewers from Upper Pass Beer Company. And I think we had about 200 or so people come to that first fest. We had a food truck, and we had a band, and it was fun. It was a big hit. And then after that, the president of the Tunbridge Fair reached out and said, you know, we've been wanting to have a beer fest at the fairgrounds. Would you be interested in organizing that? And I decided to take it on, and it has really grown from there. So this year is going to be the fifth annual NanoFest.
Oh, congratulations, and a brilliant idea. And I think it's such a great way to spotlight these smaller breweries, which have been doing phenomenal work. Do you have an idea of how many of Vermont's breweries are nanos?
Well, there's 65, almost 70 breweries in Vermont. And, you know, compared to the big national breweries, they're all really, really tiny.
Yeah.
I would say most of the breweries would fall into the nano category. In Vermont, there's not a legal definition of nano. Some states do have that. We don't. So when I started the NanoFest, my original sort of cutoff for nano was a brewery that could produce 4 barrels of beer at a time. Some of our original nano breweries have gotten a little bigger than that, but we still let them come because we're friends.
Yeah, I know Green Empire, which I can walk down from my place, is probably gotten a little bit bigger, but is still, I think, considered a nano. It's really kind of wonderful. There's another one in Jericho where you can pull into the driveway. Brewed in the back of their house, or, you know, a separate building, Lucy and Howe. And it really is the spirit of nanoism, isn't it? Where you really get to know your brewer and get to chat with them and learn about what they're making and what they're doing.
Yeah, that's true. And both of those that you mentioned, Green Empire and Lucy and Howe, are both coming to NanoFest. Lucy and Howe they're certainly they'll be the smallest brewery at the fest this year, and they've got to be one of the smallest, if not the smallest, in Vermont right now.
Oh, wow, that's really interesting. So it's this weekend at the Tunbridge Fairgrounds. What are some other breweries that will be there?
Well, we've got some new ones that bravely opened during the pandemic, which is impressive, including Farm Road Brewing, which is a new one from down in Bennington, and Whirligig Brewing is up in St. Johnsbury. I think the brewery that's going to be traveling the farthest to come to the fest is called Kramer and Kin, and they're up in the Champlain Islands.
Yeah, I've
been there too. A range of different breweries.
Oh, you have such a nice selection. I've had a number of these. I've not tried Farm Road in Bennington, so that will be interesting. Not only will people enjoy tasting these nano breweries and what they've been making, but you've got some entertainment lined up for the NanoFest. What's going on there?
Yeah, I've got three different bands. So the fest runs from noon to 6, and so each band will be playing for a couple of hours. Most of them lean sort of towards the bluegrass side of things, which makes for a fun vibe at the festival.
Oh, that's great. Anybody you want to mention?
Oh, we've got Still Hill is one of the bands. The Pillsbury Slow Boys, who are from Stratford, are coming. And then we have some of your own WDEV Radio Rangers who are going to be coming and playing.
Oh, that is so great. Although I've got to give a nod to the Pillsbury Slow Boys for best band name of the week. That is brilliant. Now, here's the bad news, listeners. It's sold out. This is a very popular beer festival, and the fact that it's sold out has got to be a testament that people are looking for the next great Vermont beer, and they're going to find it at one of these nano breweries.
I think that's true, and one thing that's a little different this year is I'm trying to keep the crowd size manageable, you know, due to concerns about social distancing.
Right.
So I did limit the total attendance this year. So it's going to be a little smaller, and in a much, much bigger space on the fairgrounds with lots of room to spread out.
All right.
So that's part of why we sold out, but certainly also because people are excited about finding new beers.
Indeed they are. So people don't get shut out next year. When do tickets usually go on sale?
Usually around the 1st of June.
All right. So you want to go to Brocklebankvt.com, As we get to late spring, start looking for tickets for next year's NanoFest, and it's such a great event to be part of. All right, let's get back to BroccoBank, and what shall I try next?
Well, let's see. Probably our flagship beer is called Stack Olie, and it's named after our late great dog. It is a pilsner, and it's made with American hops, so it's a little hoppier than your typical pilsner, and it's one that's pretty much always on our menu. It's certainly a favorite.
All right. What are the days and hours that you're open that people can make it out to the tasting room?
We're open Fridays and Saturdays, so Fridays 3 to 7 and Saturdays noon to 6, although this coming Saturday we will be closed because we'll be down at NanoFest.
All right, yeah, you get a pass for that. That's understandable. And how do people find BroccoBank? It is not the easiest, and that's not a bad thing to find in Vermont.
We are in the very corner of Tunbridge, where Tunbridge, Chelsea, Randolph, and Braintree come together. Brookfield. And
the Tri-Towns.
People can access it by we're just off the Chelsea East Randolph Road.
All right. You mentioned that you were in some bars. Will people be able to find your beers anywhere else or just at the tasting room?
Mostly just at the tasting room. We're just starting to think about getting back into some of the local bars. But just selling the beer out of the tasting room keeps us busy and keeps the beer moving.
All right. There's one more I want to ask about. I think it's described as an Irish IPA. Am I right about that?
Yes, you are.
What's that about?
That one's called Poor Patty. Mm-hmm. And it is made with flaked barley, and that's what's used in Guinness and gives it that sort of smoother, creamier mouthfeel, and we use some of that in the Poor Patty, although it's not a stout, it's an IPA, a little lower alcohol, and the other things that make it an Irish IPA, it was brewed on St. Patrick's Day, and my husband, the brewer, is of Irish heritage, and his nephew, who's interested in getting into the brewing scene, is named Patty, so it all came together to be Poor Patty.
You have such an intriguing and interesting collection at BroccoBank. I love hearing about it. Ann Linhan is co-owner of BroccoBank Craft Brewing in Tunbridge. She's the organizer of Vermont NanoFest that's being held this weekend. And you can visit BroccoBankVT.com to learn more about what they're doing there up on BroccoBank Hill in Tunbridge. And thanks for joining us this morning.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
It was. All right. Take care. That is our show for today. Vermont Viewpoint is directed by Danny McGivrigan and produced by Rachel Connor and Brady Jalili. Our email address, vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Feel free to suggest topics or guests. And you can listen to past episodes of Vermont Viewpoint by downloading our podcast at wdevradio.com, the Vermont Viewpoint podcast sponsored by the Warren Store. Funky, friendly, and almost world famous. We've got Common Sense Radio with Bill Sayre up next. I'm Rick Sengary. I'll meet you back here tomorrow.